It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
This is Reasons to be Cheerful with Ed Miliband and Jeff Lloyd.
Hello!
Happy anniversary.
Fifth anniversary.
Bloody hell.
Who'd have thought?
I mean, who'd have thought we'd still be together? I've not got off on a very good footing, have I?
Weirdly, it's my wedding anniversary today.
Oh, my goodness.
And I think I'm less surprised that you and I are still together.
What is 5 years? You're always good on these things.
Oh, I think it's polythene.
No.
I don't know. And you say I'm always good on these things. I think I'd usually just Google it while you're talking.
Well, that's what I'm going to do. Wood.
Maybe I should have whittled you something.
Were you good at woodwork?
No, terrible at it. Yeah, I mean, so predictably with my fine motor skills. But I like the idea of sitting on a porch whittling.
Right, I think I would have made you a toast rack that fell over. But I think we should say it's all very appropriate because we're back in the loft for the first time since the pandemic.
I know, in person.
In person.
Ed has bought croissants to celebrate.
From Esther's round the corner, yeah.
Oh my goodness, you got me an almond croissant, which looks so good.
I sort of thought it was a nice thing to do because it reminded me that when we first started, we'd have cookies, wouldn't we?
You know, the cookie we used to eat was voted by Eater London, London's best cookie. And I like to think that we popularised it.
Has Japanese toilet?
I'm going to be honest with you. I wouldn't go in there if I were you.
Right.
Okay. There's something going on with the plumbing.
Right.
If you need the lavatory, go to the downstairs
one. I mean, maybe there'll be new listeners who've come in who just wonder what I'm going on about the Japanese toilet. But basically, where it all began, we thought, where should we do it? And you said, well, I've got a little studio in my loft. And there's a Japanese toilet.
Oh, yeah. He was uninterested in the studio setup and the fact that we'd have nice sound quality. It was all about the Japanese toilet, which to this day, I don't think you've ever fully availed yourself of, have you?
It was malfunctioned at various moments. You did also once try and buy me a Japanese toilet for my birthday, didn't you?
Yes, and you can't get the entry-level one in this country anymore.
Entry-level. I don't think a Japanese toilet's ever been described as entry-level.
That's what that is. Hence the malfunctions.
I must say it is... I already feel miles better being, it's good to be sort of back in person, isn't it?
I agree. And I say that as a social misanthrope.
And
as
you've
well.
Been trying to persuade me to come back in person. And for various work related reasons, I've been wary.
It was hard not to take it personally. What were you like aged five? If I met Ed Miliband aged five?
Don't know, really.
Okay, good. I can just to warm you up, I would say that you would have met a young boy who was a little bit of a daydreamer and had a little difficulty focusing, loved the Muppets, and was a prolific bedwetter. So, yeah, not that much has changed.
I mean, obviously, I was availing myself of any Labour Party conference videos I could find. Do you know, originally, that my first political memory was of play school being cancelled when Harold Wilson resigned?
Couldn't they have just shown his resignation through the round window?
So that was when I was six. So I was watching play school anyway at the age of five.
And I feel strongly that the very much our chance should be five more years. The look of horror on your face at the prospect. You look like you've got something to tell me.
No, I thought you were bringing me here to have something to tell me, because as we, before the microphones were turned on, you said, oh, I've had this meeting with Rachel and Joe about, you know, 5 years on the podcast, you know, are there any changes we need to make? And I thought you were, I thought my P45 was sort of...
Ed, how could you think that? I'll be honest, negotiations with Ed Balls didn't go well.
And well, he's now a broadcaster.
We've been talking about what we can do, you know, at the 5 year point. Yep. And we were thinking, let's refresh the podcast.
Renew our vows.
And why don't we give the listeners a task?
Yeah.
We'd like new theme music. Now, that's not to disparage our old theme music, but 5 years on, why don't we try and freshen things up a bit? Let's see if we can end listeners to come up with something different. And maybe we could organise a recording session. Maybe you and I could be given musical duties.
My goodness.
Is there an instrument that you fancy?
The maracas.
I can see you playing maracas. So I was wondering if you're listening to this and maybe you're in a band, or Ooh. Maybe you've got a kid who does music, Ooh. Or maybe you noodle around in your bedroom. Let's see if we can't get some ideas from listeners. Mm. It's like the Reason to Be Cheerful song contest.
And are you going to have like juries from around Europe?
Well, we should get judges. We should get Sam Fender.
Yeah, I'm sure that'll be easy.
Sam Ryder. And there's got to be another Sam, your son, Sam.
Yeah.
Would you be open to the idea of the new theme music having lyrics to it?
As long as I don't have to sing them.
Okay. We could even... Gail does a great job for us as our announcer, yeah. But maybe we could intersperse Gail with some of our listeners' voices if they have ideas for slogans, catchphrases, if they want to record themselves and send them to us.
Wow. DIY.
Yeah. Let's see how we get on with this. I'm going to give you the email address. Usually we give you the website.
Yeah.
reasons@cheerfulpodcast.com is the email address. And let's see what we get as we move into the autumn 2022 refresh.
Yeah. There's a very successful pop band called ABBA. Maybe they could help.
Because you went to ABBA Voyage.
I know, that's why I said it. We should say what ABBA Voyage is.
This is the spectacular project that ABBA have been working on for years. They've built a custom arena in East London, and every night you can go and see ABBA perform as if by magic.
The Abbatars. Can I just say, it was an absolutely extraordinary experience.
It's unbelievable, isn't it?
It is unbelievable. This is me talking.
Because you were very worried in advance about...
Most likely to be found in a library, least likely to be found at an ABBA concert. As I was arriving, people were sort of looking at me. Some people were recognising me and looking at me as if I'd sort of taken a wrong turn. And then they looked even more mystified as I walked to the dance floor entrance. You know,
because like... you had tickets for the dance floor. You decided to go all in.
Justine's birthday. And it was absolutely brilliant.
Now, you were worried about your dance moves.
I was trying to remember what you said about how many arms you're allowed to put up in the air. Is it one, you said?
I think so, yeah. Yeah.
But for the first 10 minutes, you just thinking to yourself, okay, these people are real.
Yeah. Do you know how they do it? Ghosts.
They are very strict about no phones, which, of course, is to protect their artistic copyright, but from my point of view, was protecting my dance move embarrassment. So that was a very good relief. I thought maybe we could have a sort of general ban on phones when I'm in the vicinity. I mean, honestly, I really would recommend people go. It's absolutely amazing.
You can't understand what you're seeing. And then there's definitely a point at which, when I saw it, I looked around the room and I just saw however many thousand faces. And it's just joy. It's just pure joy.
But you said this thing to me at the end. I texted you and said, it's absolutely mega. And you said, and people come out and they're so happy. And I know, and he's exactly right. And as I was walking out, this woman said to me, Ed, what did you think? And I said, I thought it was amazing. She said, you know, as I was coming here, somebody said to me, it's going to change your life. And I think it has. And I thought, well, okay, but I mean, that is quite something. It's such a joyful experience.
And it makes you think, where is that technology going to go next?
Well, presumably Oasis, the Beatles. I mean presumably...
They could restage Woodstock. You could. I'm just spitballing here. You could reanimate your shadow cabinet from 2013.
Do you think there'd be an audience for that?
I mean, there'd be you. Yeah. I'm not sure there'd be much more of an audience.
Yeah, I think maybe not. So, there you go.
Well, I'm pleased you enjoyed it.
Honestly, it was your recommendation. It was just tremendous. I'd go again. Honestly, I would definitely go again.
I know. I feel the same way. Well, should we tell people about what we've got up our sleeve for our fifth anniversary special?
Yes, why don't you do that?
Today, we are talking to I think one of the funniest people in the UK.
Apart from me.
Whenever her latest column drops, Twitter goes into overdrive. Yeah. She is Guardian columnist Marina Hyde. She's been there for over two decades and so prolific. I mean, so many words. At one point, I think she was doing three columns a week, politics, current affairs, pop culture, celebrity, sport. And she has a book, which is an anthology of her columns from mid-2016, following the Brexit referendum to July of this year when Boris Johnson stepped down. It's called What Just Happened. It's fantastic. We've wanted to get her on the podcast for a long time, and I remember once floating her name to you, and you said in hushed tones, oh, you think she'd really come on our podcast?
Exactly. Now she has.
Yeah. That's our fifth anniversary treat for you, and I'm so excited to meet her.
And literally, I read her columns, and I just think she's just a genius.
How does she do it so consistently? We'll find out. And why don't we, because it's our fifth anniversary, why don't we do a reason to be cheerful? And we can go earnest with this one if you want to, looking back over the last 5 years.
Well, I'd say you don't look a day older than you did.
And then you're going to follow it up by saying I look like 900 days older than I did last week on Zoom. No. I think I've been ravaged by these 5 years.
Okay, well, mine is just quite earnest. I mean, we started the podcast in 2017. Donald Trump was the president of the United States. That was not a good situation. Donald Trump is no longer president of the United States.
For the time being.
Thank you. Joe Biden is president of the United States, and much against expectations, he ended up passing important climate legislation as well as other things too. So I think it's a reason to be cheerful.
Definitely. And I was going to do a climate one as well, because you can look at the last 5 years, and especially when you read Marina's book, think, to use her phrase, it's been a bit of a tire fire. But the way that climate has become such a central issue is amazing. This morning, my son had to fill in an application form. His school has an eco team, and he's desperate to join it. So we were working on the application form, and one of the sections was what ideas would you bring to your school? And actually, you look at the school and what they're doing. So much of what I would have suggested and steered him towards suggesting, they're already doing.
Wow.
It was really hard, actually,
to
come up with something with him.
No, go on. What did you come up with?
That they collect rainwater.
Yeah.
And then at the summer fair every year, dunk the teacher who's created the most waste.
You didn't say that. Was that his suggestion?
It was one of a suite of suggestions in his manifesto.
What were his slightly more serious suggestions?
Going to Parliament to protest, giving plants more space so they don't fight with each other. He's quite obsessed with the roots fighting with each other.
Yeah.
What else did he say? Oh, some kind of award for reusing a water bottle the most.
Good idea.
Yes, he had a few.
It's so striking that 10 years ago we'd have said the right ethical thing to do is to go green and all that, and obviously that's still true, even more urgent. It's also economically the right thing to do. It's much cheaper. And that is a big change.
And even in the early days of the podcast, that sounded to people like a bit of a Trojan horse for some lefty ideas.
And
now that's very much in the mainstream.
Yeah. So there are some reasons to be cheerful.
Reasons to be cheerful with Ed Miliband and Jeff Lloyd.
Well, it's time to say hello to our special fifth anniversary guest.
We are very lucky and honoured,
We are. The new book is What Just Happened, Dispatches from Turbulent Times. Marina Hyde, hello.
Hello, thank you very much for having me.
Thank you for coming on.
Yeah, we're so excited. I was saying to Ed before, some years ago, I said, what if we tried to get Marina Hyde on the podcast? And Ed went, do you think she'd do it? In hushed tones.
Prepare for disappointment.
I didn't think she would.
I thought, just to warm us up, because we're celebrating our fifth anniversary and the book roughly covers the same period of time, I thought I could do a little test with Ed, where I would read him descriptions of people from your writing and see if he can tell me who they are.
The police use the system as well, by the way.
It covers the sort of post-Ed period, doesn't it?
It does. An easy one to start with, for number one. Turbo capitalist fanny steamer magnate.
Bloody hell. Say that again.
Capitalist fanny steamer magnet.
I have no idea.
Who's going to tell you to steam your fanny?
Gwyneth Paltrow.
Yes.
Not yours.
She seems to be a favourite of yours, Marina.
She's a favourite of so many of us. in the multi-trillion dollar wellness industry, where in a world that quite demonstrably gets sicker and sicker, they sell you your illness and then they sell you the cure.
Do you like her as well, though?
No.
Not okay.
I don't think so, no, because I thought she showed her colours a bit when Donald Trump was elected, and she said, oh, this is a really actually exciting inflection point. It's like, I get that when you're sort of super politics and it doesn't really matter, it's kind of fun to say, hey, let's just throw the cards up in the air and see what happens. Anyway, perhaps we should revisit her thoughts now.
All right, ready for another?
Yep.
It's number two.
I'm not out of one, aren't I? Oh, no, I got, no, I sort of got it in the end, but I with some heavy hint, yeah.
Jacob Rees-Mogg's robot sidekick.
God, I'm stumped. Marc Francois.
I think you're close. It's close, but no cigar.
Steve Baker.
Yes.
These people became characters over the last few years. That to me is an absolute scandal and tells you everything about the age we've had to live through.
Okay. Looks like Jim Jones's corpse if it had spent 3 days getting bleached and bloated by a Guyana river.
Oh, this is because I thought he was a cult leader by this point.
Go on.
Do you want to give him the answer?
It's Boris Johnson. Yeah, no, because he looked so sort of degenerate by this point. And I did sort of think that no matter how many things people were being presented with him, they were like, no, he can't really do any wrong, no matter how much the evidence was mounting up.
How much chiselling goes into a bit of writing like that? Or does it come to you in a flash?
No, I do them all in the morning. I just get up in the morning and do them, the columns, relatively quickly, like in a
so an analogy like that is just, it's just there fully formed.
I will normally go to Google Images. This is inside the actor's
studio. No, this is interesting.
I will go to Google Images and I would look at the most recent pictures and try and let my eyes go a little bit funny and think, oh, you know, Theresa May looks like a Quentin Brake drawing of an unravelling postmistress or something, you know, when, and I just look at their most recent pictures, sometimes of them at the dispatch box, sometimes of them just walking around.
How did you discover that you had that ability? Because I think we've hit upon the thing that I find most extraordinary about your writing, which is you conjure these metaphors, these thoughts, which seem so apt and yet so kind of outlandish.
Well, the thing is, Ed, I often don't know about the obscure thing this could be compared with that happened in, e.g., a back room in Westminster in 1978. So I always have to think, okay, I'm just watching it at home on telly like the rest of people. So what does this face remind me of? Oh, so rather than having to kind of delve back into political history and explain things that way, although I do sometimes do that, in general, I really try and be a friend to the reader, and I try and I watch it at home the same as them. I don't try and think what they might be thinking, but something to amuse them rather than to say, look, I'm really clever, I happen to know this.
But like the turn of phrase and the analogies, I mean, it's the sharpness with which you're able to.
Are you like that in normal life?
I don't
like
know.
With your family?
I suppose I try and have a laugh, Ed. But you see, I've done all these things quite early in the morning, written these columns. So by that stage, I've cathartically worked through whatever latest piece of chaos and clusterfuck we've had to be in.
In a way, it's your way of getting out your rage at the
It's been
time.
Very... I have not got unresolved news issues in a way. But therapists tell you to write everything down, don't they? So I really do just...
So you're journaling.
You know, I'm essentially I'm journaling.
Gwyneth would be a fan.
Yeah, she'd be a huge fan. Yeah. I'm journaling our latest descent. And then when you've actually... You know, there is something quite therapeutic also about trying to think of the joke. Because in a way, stating what's happened or offering a commentary on it, there's a bit more of an exercise to having to go through something and try and work out what the joke or a suitable enough joke about it would be. So I do think that's quite cathartic and therapeutic, and it does help me. Many other people's brilliant jokes have helped, and their satire have helped me throughout my life. So I just try and do a teeny little bit back in return.
Couple more. Gives the press conference with the air of a man who strongly suspects there's a chalk penis drawn on his back, but is just going to butch it out by facing forwards until the bell goes.
Gavin Williamson. No.
Is it Rob?
It is Rob, yeah. Right,
yeah. Yeah. So many faces. It could have fitted quite a few at any one time, that one.
Is he a favourite, Rob?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like he's leaving us.
Yeah.
we knew him so little. Yes, he's always been good. He always seems to me to have much pent up something. I feel I've gone quite far with him. There's quite a lot. I was surprised Legal never took out of my columns related to him. I mean, I just want to say for the record that I don't think he literally has lockups and chest freezers with contents of which I just can't go into. No, I just would like to make that clear for the record in case you know, now he has more time on his hands.
How heavily legal are your columns?
Quite.
The fact that it's humour,
you thank the legals in the acknowledgement.
You get like a whole paragraph. Yeah. No one ever says thank you to them. I don't think it's quite. Yeah, no, I thank the legal in my acknowledgements, but I really try to get things into the paper, and over the, because I've done it so long, and it's, you know, you find a way of trying to get stuff in onto the page. And there are lots of different ways of doing things that essentially the reader knows you're saying exactly the same thing, but legally it's okay.
What proportion of things that go to legal come out and what proportion stay in?
Very little nowadays, because I've done the job a long time, so I mainly know, but there, some things will get flagged up. There are things that I think, I can't believe that got through. I mean, quite a lot, but I always just think, oh, well.
Yeah, I've got one more. An e-fit of a man police would like to speak to in connection with supermarket food tempering.
Oh, I know who this is. It's quite obscure.
E-fit.
Although he's the most powerful person we've spoken about today. Actual power.
Mark Zuckerberg.
Yes.
It's and that was one in the same column. That was one of about three equally good descriptions. And I will say that I was slightly trepidatious that I was going to start finding stuff about Ed. But it seems to me that Ed got quite not an easy ride. But it's, I can tell that you like Ed through the writing.
Well, there you go. You see, I have to say that this book is drawn from 2016
yes,
onwards.
That's why I say post-Ed.
And well, no, it's not post-Ed. But it's, so really what it is that it ends up being mostly about the government. I mean, I mostly write about people who are in power. And there's some things I go back and think, even though those people didn't have power or didn't look like they were going to win, I think I should. There was more scope for comedy and comment. I sort of wish I'd done more on, e.g., People's Vote. There was something very Haute Remainer about that whole thing. And I never actually felt that they were going to get what they wanted. So in the end, I just ended up tending to write about whatever Theresa May was doing at the time, as she was just desperately trying to make any of this thing happen. But I think that would have been quite funny. And I think I slightly think, but you know, so much happened. That's the thing. There were so many events.
It's been such a turbulent
time that there have been so many turbulent things. Yes. Well, I mean, the chaos that you would have ushered in, thank God we never went there.
I mean, I have to say, I was reading back your book and I did enjoy the David Cameron's last PM Hughes column. As I leave today, reflected David Cameron, I hope the people will see a stronger country. And then you say, and I hope to open the batting for England in the first test against Pakistan on the Lords tomorrow.
Every time I see that picture of him in that heart, it just drops. How can he show his face?
I know.
I don't think he does show his face very much. I think he sort of, I think actually he really offended people like him.
You like to watch new stuff, right? Well, go to Hulu and see what's new, because Hulu has new stuff all the time. Like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump, where first-class luxury meets world-class drama. A new season of The Kardashians, starring The Kardashians, of course. And Grand Cayman, Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set in the tropical Caribbean. It's all new, and it's streaming now on Hulu.
Should we talk about how you got into all this?
Yes, it was really accidental that I am a journalist at all, because after I went to university, I worked for quite a long time.
What did you do at university?
English. So in a way, you think, well, perhaps it's something that you would have done. But I never felt I would be able to do something like this, so I didn't. And I worked for a long time for a secretarial temping agency, although my typing was really slow, so I was actually just a receptionist. And I mainly worked in banks and solicitors' offices, you know, wherever they send you on any given day. And one day they said, we'd like to go and answer the phone on the bizarre desk, which was the showbiz desk of The Sun, for 3 days. And I answered the phone and it was absolutely hilarious. It was just all like celebrities ringing in saying who they were in bed with. It was people saying, I'm going to kill Chris Evans tonight on TFI Friday. Are you interested? The phone calls were, I mean, bear in mind, if you've been just putting people through at a bank, you're suddenly in this and you're supposed to field them all. It was so, and I found.
Would people tip off stories about themselves?
God, you realised, it was a big eye opener for me, and sort of you realised how much of it was a sort of game and how many of the people in the papers at the time, either their publicist or them, were directly ringing in to keep themselves there. Not always at all, but a huge amount was kind of.
So you did 3 days.
Generated, as they would say.
So you did.
So I did 3 days, but then the next person didn't come or couldn't stand it. So I then ended up staying a few weeks. And then I said, oh, can I stay? So I did all these sort of, you know, dog's body jobs and helping with picture research and running up and down cuttings, all different things. And gradually I managed to get myself a sort of permanent position there. But that was really...
On the bizarre desk?
Not on the bizarre desk. Actually, I read about television and then I did... they had a listing supplement. They were all different little things that I did, none of which were particularly interesting. So that was a way in which is really unusual. But, you know, I was on a sort of national paper and I honestly wouldn't have thought I would be kind of good enough to get into journalism at all.
And how did you make the transition from the Sun
to the Then I went to the Guardian and so long ago now. I think it was still
the Manchester Guardian.
Maybe, yeah, it was 2000. And I went to work on the diary for the brilliant Matthew Norman, who used to write this column called The Diary, which was really just...
And you applied for a job there.
Yeah. And he asked me to do it. And we just did stupid phone calls and things like that to politicians. We never really had any stories. We just would ring politicians and say relatively rude things that they didn't quite realise were rude until a bit late in the call, and then they would put the phone down us and we would run the transcripts of the calls. So something to be aware of. And no one does it anymore. No. And again, so much raw material. But I guess all politicians are now sort of freelancing on Twitter anyway, so it's not quite the same thing.
And how did you carve out space to be funny, though? Because this is something I never understand, how somebody goes from reporting or doing features to getting your own voice.
Well, I suppose the diary is supposed to be funny. And then when I did get columns, I tried to make them funny. But I did always, actually, for a long time, I suppose I sort of felt a weight of expectation and I did try to be quite serious.
Was there anybody that you tried to be like?
I think I tried to be quite like Matthew, my boss, who I've just spoken about, who I thought was absolutely brilliant and I think is absolutely brilliant. And there were other people, you know, I just felt I had to be sort of weighty. And then when I abandoned that completely, weirdly, and thought, this is ridiculous, which is all the result of confidence. You think, I don't actually have to be like other people, I can be myself.
I'm still working on that. I don't know you, Jeff.
No, I'm still working on it too, but I'm closer than I was. And I find that when I started just trying to tell lots of jokes, weirdly, I ended up being able to say much more serious things. I know that sounds mad and maybe you disagree with having read my writing, but I really feel that once I sort of abandoned all that kind of idea of I'm writing a weighty essay or whatever, I ended up being able to say more serious things, although often via jokes.
It's like me after 2015, not that it's all about me. but yes, I know the feeling. But yeah, I know the feeling.
It's a thing, isn't it? It's funny. I think that's really right. Yes, I think that is true.
And was there
any
snobbery about, because you did the, for a long time, do you still do the Lost in Show business?
I started that. And that was the first column I found my voice on, because I really thought, we never covered celebrities in The Guardian. And then Alan Rossbridge just said, who was the editor at the time, said, you know, I think this is a bit going to be like the Times not doing rock and roll in the 1960s, because the 2000s, there were only two subjects. It was like Islamic fundamentalism and celebrity culture. That was it. So you really had to, until 2008. But then, so for that whole decade, you really had to be writing about those one or other of those subjects. Anyway, I started this showbiz column, which people really liked, because it was a way of doing it and often a different way of looking at it. And I found my voice in that. And that was all jokes, but with some serious points, strangely. And then also in a sports column I wrote, where I felt, you know, there were no women at all doing that particular time.
I was about to say, it's miles better
now, but at the time it was, and definitely when you went on the sports tour and you went to things like the World Cup or the Olympics, I mean, you know, there were really hardly any, and it was, you know, some of the attitudes that persist amongst the press pack. It's lovely. It's like lovely stepping back for 30 years
time
of time.
Travel.
It's like, yeah, it's like a lovely piece of time travel. Anyhow, but I felt like, okay, well, I can't sort of be in the in club, as it were, and I'm not, so I'll just do my own thing. And actually realising that you can't fit in is sometimes the best way to find your own
voice. Sports do you most like writing about?
I don't know, cricket or football. I love doing the Olympics because it's such a sort of mad event. The sort of mega events are fascinating. Probably I wrote most about football or maybe cricket. I don't know. I mean...
Oh, you've always been interested in sport, basically.
Yes. Yeah, but I'm also the characters in it. It's a bit like politics or showbiz. You know, really, I feel like we're just writing about these characters. And I suppose all the best humour comes from character, all the best comedy comes from character and tragedy as well, their flaws. And so I always used to sort of do it through the prism of the people who were
And you're down at this point, it's two columns a week.
I do too, yeah. I'm really quick, though.
You really are, though. I mean, this is what's baffling. If you think of comedians, which I know is a different thing, but they'll go on tour and they can take a year to write a show.
And so you don't torture yourself about, is this the right metaphor? Is this the right...
No, it's a trade, Ed. There's not enough time to torture yourself. Yeah. You've got, I get up and I try and do it in sort of 2 or 3 hours and you just, it's a trade and you become much, much quicker. And I tell you what has made me quicker than anything in the whole world, and that is having children. And if someone had told me that before, but before I had children, I would work massively inefficiently. And after I had children, I was saying, oh, I've got to pick them, I've got to do all this, you know, and I want to be there for them. My focus became massively better and I spent less time on it, but the work itself, if I can be so wanky as to use the word work about my nonsense, became better. And I found myself much more able to do even more things and to take many more risks as well, because I felt that, you know, my children were the most important thing in my life. So in a way, I was, like, held on less tightly to work and I thought, oh, it doesn't matter if it's, I'll take this risk and it doesn't matter if it doesn't work out. So I've
you
taken
think
far
got,
more
you've
professional
got better
risks.
By being less precious?
Yes, better by being busier, less precious, just realising that it doesn't really matter that much. And if, you know, you make a total fuck up, it doesn't really matter and it'll all, you know, you can fix it.
And what time do you sit down? What time do you open the laptop?
Well, I get up, like at the moment I'm getting up at 4:30, but normally I'm at my desk
4:30.
At 5. Yeah, no, I know, it's ridiculous. But I'm doing all these other things as well. I'm doing like sort of all this TV stuff and, you know, there's quite a lot to do with the book at the moment. So I just have to, in order to make it all work...
If you get stuck on a joke, who do you trust to ring or call in to help you fix it?
I don't
it?
Think there's any time, really, because you don't have that much time.
And are you aware, like when, as so often happens with your columns, when people go nuts for it, do you keep an eye on that? Do you enjoy having your ego straight
mentions.
In that way?
I think
mentions.
You've got to keep...
Do you look at
treat,
your
treat the two imposters just the same. No, I sometimes, yes, but I think that Twitter is a real time suck and a productivity suck in general. And I think it's really easy to think that you're doing something when you're on it. And I totally understand the need for it. And by the way, I use it a lot to sort of see things and I put my work on it. But it's interesting how many kind of creative people I know, really creative, really successful creative people, are nowhere near any form of social media because they just feel like it ultimately will take the time off what
and do you,
that they find important.
And when you, and if you look at what people are saying about your column,
yeah,
and someone says something nasty,
I don't care what anyone says about my column.
You don't care?
No.
Genuinely don't care?
I don't care.
That is really impressive.
I would have if I was younger, yeah. But now, as I say, it's so what?
Not at all.
Not at all. No.
Even if you think, oh, they might have been right.
Well, I've tried and learned from it, if I think they might have been right, but, you know, it's only a newspaper column. We're not saving babies here, let's face it. You mind about it? Do you?
Well, I don't look at my Twitter. I don't look at Twitter because of, not necessarily because of me, but because of people taking lumps out of each other in a horrible way. But, you know,
it's quite circular. And I find that sometimes I look at it and I think, oh, I see, these are the 10 joke formats that are in vogue on the platform.
Though.
And they say them and everyone is making a version of those.
So how do you avoid it? So if a column, you know, there's a lag. I don't know how many hours it is between you sending it off and then it...
Sometimes quite long. I sometimes wonder why it takes quite so long to put up.
But do you worry that, you know, if it's your first thought, you're just going to end up replicating the things that people have been saying on Twitter, the jokes that people have been making on Twitter?
Oh, yeah, I don't look at it on the day when I'm writing it, so...
And have you, and can I ask you?
I'm sure there are no new ideas.
I'm not trying to be in
the
psychiatrist's chair here, but have you always been, you must have always been like that. Slightly.
No, I
don't
think so. No, I think that is something that has come with time. You know, as I say, part of it's having children, you think really it doesn't really matter what.
Would you have cared 10 years ago, 15 years ago?
Maybe, yeah. I can't remember when it was. No, less. I remember once having some argument with somebody about something, saying, well, no, actually, I don't think this column meant that. And then just thinking, this is ridiculous. I've literally spent an hour of my Saturday doing this. I will never argue on the internet again.
I mean, that is really
true. And I have
true.
Attempted, there may be like a couple of odd exceptions, but in general, I do not argue on the internet. I actually said this recently in a column and I said, arguing on the internet is like playing real tennis. Even if you win, you're still a twat. And do you know that the head of the British Real Tennis Association wrote to The Guardian with quite a sort of familiar type of letter. I've always enjoyed Marina Hyde's column about absolutely everything else, but I'm absolutely disgusted now she's made a joke about, I'm paraphrasing vaguely here, now she's made a joke about real tennis. I've enjoyed on everything. This is, I mean, I'm really, why? It's like, oh man, it's just a way to get off, as they used to say in vaudeville. It's like the last line of a column about Elon Musk. I mean, it doesn't matter. But, you know, anyway, but he got his long letter in, and I apologise to any real tennis playing listeners, but, you know, I've got a view about the sport, and that's not going to change.
Wait till you get onto pickleball. Do you know about pickleball?
Tell me what it is.
Have you heard of pickleball?
No.
Pickleball is a craze. It's sweeping America. It is half court tennis with a wiffle ball. And I know it sounds like I'm making this up, but like literally millions of people in America are playing it.
He keeps going on about this. I think
they're a real fortress of their sports.
Jeff and I are going to go into the pickleball business.
Well, if we can figure out what that
pickleball
business
pickleball
is.
Courts.
Yeah, in the UK.
Just
yes.
Look up any New York Times article about pickleball. Honestly, they write about pickleball all the time.
Are you really going to import? Yeah, like you should go into the baseball business over here. How do you get on?
I love baseball.
I love baseball too.
I love baseball.
I hope you're not going to go into the baseball business over here, because I can tell you.
Some people play baseball here, don't they?
Some people do, but it's not going to be bigger than cricket.
Maybe that's true. I love baseball. Yeah. Anyway, I won't go on about baseball.
I personally love baseball, but yes.
Is it the case that most people you write about, or a significant proportion, want to be seen as being in on the joke of themselves, in the same way as people used to buy their own spitting image puppets?
No, is it?
I don't know. I've never had any thank you letters.
Has anyone written to you to complain about your column that you've written about them?
No, I have had no horse's heads and no thank you
letters. Apart from the real tennis.
Apart from the real tennis, yeah. But like Branson, Richard Branson, people like that, you know, sort of people who aren't in politics. In politics, no. I would say that strains in politics, I felt that there was some on the sort of Corbynite left who just didn't really think that any jokes should be allowed. Even if you're telling jokes about Boris Johnson every week, not even 1 week of jokes can be about Jeremy Corbyn. And I thought that was rather disappointing, because I think jokes should be allowed about everybody. But in general, no, I don't get any complaints.
As a sort of politician, I would say, if I was a politician that you're writing about, you'd think, if I complain, she might write about me next week as well.
You wouldn't complain. No, it's just...
You wouldn't complain.
How aware are you in your position of if somebody writes something like that?
Yes, do you read it? I mean, I don't really read
it. I try not to...
The newspapers with loads of holes in them?
People don't write about me anymore. But when I was leader, I definitely didn't read the newspapers. And I think it's very important not to... John Major, everyone says, I don't know if it's true, but you used to read the newspapers and used to drive him mad.
I don't read the newspapers.
I don't think you want to read about yourself, do you?
No, definitely not. No, don't. There's an interview with me that came out yesterday, because I never do anything to do with any interviews or any broadcast or anything at all, and I'm just so dreading. And there's an interview of me of all ridiculous places, talk about the interloper, and pictures in Vogue. I've refused to look at it. I said to my husband, look at it, go into the newsagents, look at it, tell me how bad it is, and then just come out. And he said, it's lovely. I said, right, I won't be looking at it. I'm not going to look at it.
And can I just ask you then, you're very confident about your writing. Why don't you do more?
I tell you what, I'm just a writer and that's it. And I know it's really unfashionable. I have no interest in being like a media brand. I do not want to go on to television to increase my profile. You know, when
8 out of 10 cats.
They're not for me, no. But
have
no,
I got news? You've always,
no.
You've always, they must have asked you.
Unquestioned, I mean, all those sort of things. But it's not worth it. I mean, also, I can't, I mean, the whole pageant of it, well, I hate it. No, I'd much rather be at home and read a book or watch the telly or go and see.
So when you talk about all the other stuff, what are you doing? You talk about drama. What's is it? Sitcom?
I've got various sitcoms and movies and all sorts of different things in development.
And what does that feel like to go from being somebody in presumably a home office to working with a team of people?
Well, some of it is they're just mine, so it's still in the home office, but some is with a team. But I've absolutely loved it. It's just doing something totally different is so exciting, and it's really good to be scared again, because I have been doing journalism a long time. And so there is a sort of level of like basic adequacy. Many of your listeners may disagree, but, you know, I can at least get up, do it. I know what I have to do. Whereas being really scared about not really understanding what, you know, how can I make this scene work? How can, you know, I'm in a writer's room. Oh my gosh, I hope this doesn't go disastrously. Yeah, it's brilliant to be scared again. And it's made me feel much younger in my mind, although quite tired in my body because I have to get up quite early, but it doesn't matter.
Do you think if we had a Labour government, is what's happened in the last 6 years and what's in this book,
I mean, a lot of that is a product of the times that we've lived through. I mean, to state the bleeding obvious.
Yeah, definitely. No, I know.
Would it be harder under a Labour government, well, given that you're coming from a progressive point of view?
But yeah, in a way, but, you know, that my job is not really to be the progressive imprint, as it were. I just, you have to be able to write about all of them, and just as if I was a sketch writer or whatever. I have to be honest that, you know, I wrote a lot about Blair and Brown during those years. There was plenty to write about.
Yes.
Once you're in government, we know, things go wrong. They just, chaos ensues, things go wrong. Personalities reveal themselves in ways that they hadn't before. In my view, there is always something to write about, and a new cast of characters after a long time.
I'm sure that's true. I suppose what I'm getting at is partly that it seems to me that one of the reasons why people love your column so much is that you are a voice for kind of angry progressives, but in a much more unpredictable an interesting way than lots of people. You know what I mean? You just provide something which is totally different from what lots of other people are providing.
Well,
don't you think?
I understand why. I mean, you know, angry progressives may still exist.
No, under, understood. No, you know, totally.
And that could happen. I mean, you never know how it's going to turn out. That, and in a way, that's the exciting thing. There'll always be something new to write about.
I'm not saying you're going to be put out of business by a Labour government, I promise you.
Well, no. I mean, I think, you know, a period where you could not think about the news, however it was brought about, for 3 weeks on end would be really nice.
I mean, you probably
in the old days, we didn't think about the news
for
a really long time.
We had John Ronson on a while ago. We were talking about satire.
I love him.
He's brilliant. But he was somebody who couldn't do what you did over a period of time. It nearly killed him writing a weekly column. But he was saying, you know, he'd rewatched Cabaret recently.
Yeah.
And what that says about satire, that everybody's being oh so droll in the Kit Kat Club.
Well, that's what Peter Cook said. When Peter Cook in the 60s opened a satirical nightclub, if you can imagine a concept that I would like more, and called it The Establishment. And he said, even when he was launching it, he said, well, of course, we modelled on all the great sort of underground clubs in Weimar Germany, which did so much to stop the rise of Hitler in the Second World War. It never changes anything. I firmly 100% believe this, that nothing Swift wrote ever changed anything. It doesn't change anything.
So is it a bomb then?
Yes, it is a bomb. But isn't it nice to sort of, for me, when other people have written brilliant things, amazing sort of satires that I've grown up on, The Day Today or The Thick of It or all these, you know, even watching sort of John Oliver, now you're thinking, what they do is sort of scoop you up in a gang of us and say, look at awful old them. And they give you new ways of looking at them. And once they've shown you that way, but someone, I think it's, I can't remember. There's a bit in one of Oscar Wilde's criticism books where he says something like, you know, sunsets didn't actually exist until Turner painted them, which is obviously a joke. But what he's saying is, you were given that way of looking at it, and then you could never see them in the same way again. And the same as no one after The Thick of It can ever look at politics in the same way again. It hasn't changed it. I think it's still really quite similar, but no one can look at it in the same way again. And it gives you that kind of, it's a balm. It gives you that way of seeing things. And it says, you've been seen. Yeah, we agree. This is ridiculous. I saw it too. This is what I thought of it. I think there's a camaraderie in it.
So given that we're sort of ostensibly a podcast about optimism, is the optimism in what you do actually just seeing the conveyor belt of it?
I suppose in trying to find the humour in it, you know, I'm just trying to give people a good 3 or 4 minutes with anything I've written. If I can do that, that's as much as I can hope for, just to give someone a good part of their downtime if that's what they like. I love it when people say to me, I'm saving it for a cup of tea, or I'm saving it for a glass of wine. And you just think, well, that is how I would wish to be enjoyed if anyone does want to enjoy me. I'd really like that.
We should just ask, when is the book out? When will people be able to buy it?
The book is out on October the 6th and is available for pre-order via all your usual outlets.
Well, listen, it's been fantastic to have you.
Oh, it's been lovely.
We are going to carry on enjoying your columns, even under a Labour government. Marina Hyde, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, thanks so much, guys. Thank you.
Send us your ideas or suggest a guest for a future episode. Email reasons@cheerfulpodcast.com. Find us on Facebook or tweet @cheerfulpodcast.
Wahoho, we're in the outro.
I've missed that wahoho in person.
Oh, I know.
I mean, it's good on Zoom, but in person it's something else. And 5 more years? How do you see things 5 years from now, then?
Yikes. So what year is that? 2027?
Yes.
Oh, love me, I don't know. I don't like being predictions business.
No, of course. We'll be having to fit the podcast around your role in government and my role in the House of Lords.
Mm.
I mean, will you have any say in that? Knighthoods?
I just don't think you should sort of... I don't think... think MBEs? About, don't think about that in the five-year frame, I think. I think sort of I'm worried about raising your expectations.
A CBE in 5 years?
Yeah, take it under advisement.
I did tell you that the big mistake you made was change your name to Jeff Baron Lloyd rather than Baron Jeff Lloyd. That would have solved all the problems.
I know.
You'd have got the place at the restaurant. It's Baron Lloyd here.
Sometimes on drop downs on internet forums, I will change my name to Professor Lord or Admiral and see if it makes any difference. And it never really seems to.
Mm.
I think when I walk into the restaurant, I don't have the air of an admiral.
I think that flannel shirt could be a, could be a sort of casual admiral. Right, I think we should end this podcast.
Well, I mean, not permanently.
Giddiness. Yeah. Well, maybe not.
I should remind you that if you have a musical submission for us, we want to refresh the signature tune, then please send it in. We're going to start our Reasons to be Cheerful song contest. And if you maybe want to be part of the new voiceovers for the podcast as well, got any ideas for slogans, you want to record yourself, the email address is reasons@cheerfulpodcast.com. You can just do it on your phone if you want. We just have to rough sketches at this point. It doesn't need to, don't let perfect be the enemy of good. And we should thank Marina Hyde.
Oh, she's brilliant.
What a talent. Emma Corsham is our audio producer. Rachel Barmer produces all our content and does all the research and guest booking, supported by Joe Kenyon at Goldfish. Gail Lofthouse is our announcer. Ed Seed composed the music. James Deacon made our idents. And our artwork was made by
Henry Cole. He's been Jeff Lloyd, as handsome and as lovely as he was 5 years ago.
He's been Ed Miliband, typical insincere politician.
And these have been
Reasons to be Cheerful.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.